From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Law is on our minds as we head into the weekend. The Supreme Court delivered major rulings this week. Today, we'll talk about the impact of one of those here in Georgia, and we'll talk about possible legal consequences for law enforcement officers who are careless with their canine partners. Should Georgia police officers be tried when they leave their dogs in hot cars?
Here, I'm going to get in my car. When I start dying, I will honk the horn 3 times. That means save the dog.
That's coming up this hour. First, though, let's return to yesterday's conversation with Harlem Globetrotter Moose Weeks. He and his teammates are now models for animated character designs for students at SCAD.
My teammates always joke like, oh, what are we pulling out of Moose's hair? Because, you know, the superhero on the show.
He was always pulling stuff out of his fro. So.
Gizmo, give me some monocular.
Well, they're in here someplace. Ah, here.
The original Harlem Globetrotters cartoon aired on CBS from 1970 to 1972. We wondered, is there a cartoon you'd love to see return to TV? Here are your first thoughts. Proactive had a few in mind. She tweets, Josie and the Pussycats, Fat Albert, and the Proud Family. Hashtag no judging me. Jay Cowett writes, Space Ghost Coast to Coast, Frisky Dingo, Ren and Stimpy, and The Head. Great choices. And Neil Cassidy adds, Speedy Gonzales, Pepe Le Pew, Gone But Not Forgotten. Some classic suggestions from Neil.
We can do away with the dull preliminaries and make love right away. We can spend the rest of our lives making love.
We always want to know what you think. You can call us at 404. I don't know what to say to that. 404-500-9457. We're on Twitter at OST Talk or post on Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the show. The U.S. Supreme Court handed supporters of affirmative action a victory yesterday. It was a 5-4 ruling, and the justices rejected a complaint against the race-conscious admissions program at the University of Texas, Austin. For more on what that ruling means for schools right here in Georgia, I'm joined by Tanya Washington. She's a law professor at Georgia State University. Welcome back.
Thank you, Celeste.
And congratulations.
Thank you. Tanya
has had a baby, an adorable baby, since she was last here.
Thanks.
But let's move on from cute babies to less cute admissions policies. So this is a limited affirmation of affirmative action, is it not?
Yes, it's a victory, definitely, in that the court reinforced that educational diversity, of which racial diversity is one aspect, is still a constitutional goal. The challenge is that it has limited the means by which schools can achieve that goal to some very narrow efforts. And those efforts principally include non-racial recruitment to achieve racial diversity, which in some sense doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, nobody's quite sure what that means or what that would look like yet.
Exactly.
But does this mean all our schools here in Georgia need to go back to the drawing board and change their admissions policies?
I don't think they have to go back to the drawing board. Certainly the court's affirmance of UT's race-conscious admissions program, where race is
it's a factor of a factor.
That's how the court described it. Is, you know, because they affirm that, that can be kind of the comparative model. But University of Texas spent a lot of money, and made a lot of efforts over a course of 15 years. Some non-racial efforts, some racialized efforts, and unless we can duplicate that, there's always the risk that the court can say, that's not quite what we meant when we said reasonable efforts.
Okay, let me try and make sure I'm understanding what you're saying. You're saying that our schools, because the cost is so high, may not go back and redo their admissions policies. But if they don't, it's a possibility they could be sued.
Absolutely. I mean, the opinion was broadly drafted such that it can accommodate different efforts, right? So we want our schools to be laboratories to figure out how to achieve racial diversity. But it also imposed some significant restraints, like don't use race until you absolutely have to, after you have used or employed non-racial means of achieving racial diversity. So the schools, Georgia State, UGA, Emory, those schools that aren't using racial diversity using race as a consideration in their admissions policies are going to have to look to see how closely their programs reflect what the court says is an appropriate way to achieve race in racial heterogeneity in our classrooms.
Why is there so much attention on race instead of all the other factors? For example, why is it legal to give someone extra points as a legacy because my mom went to one particular university, but race as a factor becomes so constrained?
Well, in the constitutional framework, any use or consideration of race as part of a legal concept is going to be subject to strict scrutiny, the strictest constitutional inquiry, because we have such a history with racial discrimination. And the court has said that using race to discriminate is the functional equivalent of using race to remediate or using race to diversify.
Right. Okay, so we'll have to see if any universities here actually do change their policies or not. Tanya Washington is a law professor at Georgia State University. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Celeste.
The next story may be difficult for some of our listeners to hear about, especially animal lovers. It's about a police dog assigned to the Cherokee County School District, a 4-year-old canine named Inca, was left inside his handler's police cruiser at the end of their shift. The dog died of heat exhaustion. And Inca is not the first Georgia police canine in recent years to die under similar circumstances inside hot cars. George Mathis explored how often this has happened. He's a columnist with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He says Georgia leads the nation when it comes to canine officers dying in hot cars. George, thanks for joining me.
Good to be here. Thanks.
How many canine officers have we lost?
Well, since 2013, we've lost 4 due to hot cars and only 1 due to gunfire in the line of duty.
So in 3 years or so, 4 have died because they were left in the car?
Yes.
More than 1 a year?
That's right. And if you go back to 2012, there was another incident in 2012, which is perhaps the most shocking one. And in that case, too, the officer was, you know, didn't face any criminal charges.
And yet the officer from Cherokee County may. What are the charges that could be brought against an officer that killed a canine officer because they left him in a car?
Well, in general, the officer in Cherokee is facing aggravated animal cruelty charges, which is punishable from 1 to 5 years. But he's being charged in relation to the death of a second dog, not the dog he left in the car. My understanding is that a dog retired in 2012. He took that dog home as a personal pet. And soon after taking the dog home, he's accused of shooting that dog and killing it. That's what he's being charged with. He's not charged in the hot car incident.
So what if a civilian injures or kills a canine officer? Are the charges or possible consequences different?
Well, yeah. In 2015, the Georgia legislature tried to ramp up the punishment for harming or potentially killing a canine officer. They tried to make it a second-degree murder offense for intentionally killing a police dog. They did water that down quite a bit, but it's largely a misdemeanor charge at the moment if you harm a police dog. But if you kill a police dog, I believe it's a felony.
So, I mean, these police dogs are worth quite a bit of money. Their training costs over $20,000, does it not?
Yeah, it depends. It's highly variable. I did some research on that, and $20,000 to $40,000 is what I've read. $25,000, I think, is a good estimate.
So, are there no charges that can be brought just related to the value of the dog to the state?
I don't think a criminal charge would probably be what they would look at. Probably just a demotion, which usually happens, or just no longer being able to handle canine officers.
Does that usually happen? Once they leave the dog in the car, they're
usually not, part of the canine unit anymore. My understanding is the 5 cases I've looked at in Georgia since 2012, all of the officers were either demoted or left the department. So like one guy in Woodstock in 2013, Officer Chad Berry, he killed his three-year-old dog, died in a hot patrol car, and he was demoted to the traffic department. His salary was lowered, I believe, by $6,000 a year.
So it feels like the most important question here is why? Why is this happening in Georgia more than other states?
Well, I thought about that, too. I believe, Georgia's had four since 2013. I think Texas has had three. Texas is a much larger state, 2.5 times the population. Florida's only had two. Florida's got 2 times as many people, and it's much hotter down there. I think Georgia suffers from a lot of smaller departments that have dog units that maybe shouldn't have them, or they don't have the proper oversight. I believe there needs to be probably some statewide oversight of canine units. Most of the deaths occur, it seems, in smaller departments. In Savannah, they lost a dog in 2013 at Savannah State College. I'm not sure why a college would have a canine unit when they could probably use, the larger county police department could probably provide dogs when they needed that sort of service.
What kind of training does an officer get before they're issued a police dog?
I'm not sure, and I don't think there are any statewide there's no standards nationwide, and that should probably happen too. But I'm not really sure exactly what the standards are.
So, how many do we have any idea? How many total canine units there are in Georgia?
No, I don't have an idea of how many canine units there are. I do know that there's being a police dog and being a canine officer is very dangerous. I know that in 2015, 27 canine officers died nationwide, and over about half of them died from heat exhaustion being left in cars, and only 4 of those died from gunfire in the line of duty. And that's just really shocking to me.
I'm sorry, I have to make sure that's correct. 27 nationwide and only 4 were actually killed in the line of duty?
Well, no, many died in the line of duty. Being left in a hot car could be construed as being in the line of duty, I guess.
See.
But only 4 died by being shot by a criminal suspect. I believe 12 died from heat exhaustion after being left in a car.
I mean, we only have about a minute left, but George, but do you have any kind of understanding on why this keeps happening? That seems like a huge number of dogs.
It is, and I believe, in the case of the Cherokee Officer Peabody, what he had a car that was properly equipped with a heat monitor, but he didn't use his vehicle that day, and he loaned that car to another person, and he chose to use a vehicle that did not have a heat monitor in the car. He went home where his wife had an unlicensed dog kennel and was helping her work with dogs there, and he left the Cherokee dog, the officer, in a car for 4 hours, and it died by the time he remembered.
Of course it did.
Yeah. So, I think a lot of the times there's a lack of training, and a lot of times there's a lack of the officers seem preoccupied with other things. And, I think jurors down in Brunswick are going to have to consider, is it possible to leave a loved one in the back seat of a car, and it seems like it's an accident that happens. And a lot of times we question how something like that could happen, but it seems like it does happen.
That's Atlanta Journal-Constitution columnist George Mathis. George, thank you.
Thank you.
This is On Second Thought. Let's add 2 more songs to our Georgia playlist. That's our collection of the best songs from and about Georgia, chosen by a curated list of music fans. The rules are very simple. All tunes have to be written or performed by a Georgian, and musicians can't pick one of their own songs to go on the playlist. Today's selections come from neo-soul singer Joy Gilliam. She's performed with some of the biggest names in music, like Outkast and Goody Mob, but her personal taste leans in a funkier direction. Here are her Georgia playlist selections.
My first pick for the Georgia playlist is Just Be Good to Me by the SOS Band. That synth funk orchestration that they come with every time, in my opinion, is unmatched. And it's just not spoken about enough, how incredible SOS is. And I think people forget that they're from Atlanta, too. But it's just one of the baddest songs ever. Kind of revolutionary and feminist on the content too, almost on some I don't even care what you're doing with anybody else, you better be good to me, handle your business on however you do it with whoever, but when you come over here, have your thing right. I love that. SOS has just been a band who has continually fought the good fight, and they still tour to this day, and they kick ass. When I listen to Just Be Good to Me, I feel well fed in the funk every time. You are all mine. Friends seem to always listen to the bad things that you do. You never do them to me. My second pick for the Georgia playlist, I'm going to stay in the funk area and speak about some folks that I don't think get included in the greatness conversation as often as they should. I'm going to go with Cameo, Shake Your Pants. Yeah, I always like to scrap my thing, shaking my pants to the rhythm swing. Do you want to dance? Masterful composition, fun, playful, but razor sharp funk, vocal monsters on that song, so much creativity and risk taking on that song, so many different styles of vocals combined at once. I think the way the Cameo was doing it was very sensual, but it also almost had like a little punk avant-garde thing to it almost. It wasn't something that you would necessarily readily identify as something that was Southern, you know, coming from the South. It almost seemed like it could have been like, you know, Afro-European or something. Like it just had that otherly kind of thing on it from their visual to the music. They were able to strike that sweet spot where you make hit records, but you can still keep it funky. Shake your pants, shake your pants, and let the vibes come through. Right when the bridge was about to end, I was like, shake your pants. And then it goes, shake, 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 shake. That part. That's the part right there. Shake your pants. Then that breath, and it comes right back down with that horn blast, right down on the one. Oof. Yeah. They were daring, and I think that they pushed the boundaries on retaining the authentic old school quality of funk, but also pushing it forward, you know, into the future. The Georgia sound to me is Sweet Tea and Mosquitoes and Hot Pants and Beautiful Black Skin and Getting Free. I like it tonight, cause that's right, my body feels just right, don't stop me, no, just watch me. I'll show you how.
mouth.
That's singer-songwriter Joy Gilliam with her two picks for our Georgia playlist. If you have a song you'd want to put on the Georgia playlist, and come on, you know you do, we would love to hear about it. Call us at 404-500-9457. You can tweet us at OST Talk as well and nominate a tune. You'll find the entire Georgia playlist series along with other great music segments that we've done. It's all at gpbnews.org.
Shake your pants, shake your pants, and let the vibes come through.
It's been a long week. We've talked about what's filming in Georgia, a cartoon show based on the Harlem Globetrotters, and the real definition of the word, the phrase third world. Now it's time to sit back, relax, and let's celebrate Friday, shall we? Let's head into the break room.
So we're calling the restaurant Dunch. We were going to call it Le Unch.
Like L apostrophe Unch, like late brunch.
iScout is a portable head-up display unit which connects to your phone and vehicle. It projects all the necessary information you need as a transparent image hovering in front of you.
Don't text or Twitter during the show. Just live your life. Don't keep telling people what you're doing.
Joining us in the break room, Donnie Liebhardt is a filmmaker and longtime employee of the Videodrome. Tamika DePriest is marketing and communication strategist. Kathy Lohr is a former NPR correspondent. And Hector Fernandez is a professor at the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University. Hello, everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome
morning.
Back, Donnie. It's been ages.
Wow, yes.
All right. Well, it's actually 9:30 is about the right time for brunch, isn't it? Breakfast, supposedly the most important meal of the day. People get up late, so why not brunch? When you go to brunch spots here, the lines are often long. If you've ever tried to get a table at noon on a Saturday without a reservation, good luck.
People at brunch love to talk about other brunch. Oh, this place has a better brunch. Why don't we go there? Because we couldn't get in. All right, let's eat this.
Writer Miranda Popke from the website Extra Crispy says brunch tells us something deeper about our culture. She says brunch is an opportunity to mimic the lifestyle of the upper class, even though if you don't have the same level of income or status. So that has raised this argument about whether or not brunch is a sign of gentrification. What do we think? All right. First of all, out of the four of you, which one of you eats brunch?
Well,
regularly.
Not regularly, but I was just at brunch on Father's Day with a big group.
I feel like a holiday brunch is different, though.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah, because amongst my friends, brunch is just an excuse to drink alcohol during the day, you know, with mimosas. And yeah, it's just like, hey, let's get together and drink.
Unless it's Sunday and then there's restrictions on what time you can start
drinking those mimosas. That's true. But we always pick the bottomless mimosas. But I'm like, wait a minute, what are you telling me about your life?
Wait, so brunch is just a way to make it acceptable to start drinking early in the day.
Exactly. It's like football on Sundays, like drink beer in the middle of the day.
If you're tailgating.
Yeah.
Okay. Hector, what do you think?
I think the use of the word is just bougie.
The worst of the use of the word brunch?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just, I just favor a solid breakfast. If it's a late breakfast combined with lunch, it's a late breakfast combined with lunch. There's no need to go like brunch. I mean, that's all.
Okay.
I think we're being too hard on the word brunch. I think that I have meals with people sometimes, and namely, it's a group of people, a group of friends. And if you want to call it brunch, that's fine.
Okay.
One thing, I don't mind brunch. I just don't like that it's not coordinated. Like, I'll go to brunch with some friends. Some people are ordering lunch food. Some people are ordering breakfast food. No, let's not do that.
Oh, you don't.
Now
you believe
why?
In the segregation of the foods?
I don't believe in that. We have to eat together. It's like going to a movie theater and we're going to a separate
room. You're eating an omelet.
Anal eater.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to something that may stir more emotions. Sperm banks. We know that that's an option for people who want to become parents. They can be very expensive, though. We probably all know that as well. And there's often uncertainty about who the sperm donor is. A professor in Brooklyn solved that problem. He's answered the call for single women who don't have a lot of money for more than a decade. Ari Nagel has sired 22 kids with a whole host of different mothers. He's often conducted that business inside public bathrooms, like in Target. He'll just pop into the bathroom real quick and come out with his sample. So what do we think of this? An ingenious solution?
Yuck. Sorry. You know, when you say he's using public bathrooms, I'm like, oh.
He's male, so he's probably not sharing the bathroom with you, but.
Well, I just think he's a sick man, honestly.
Okay.
And, he has 22 children. and he believes he's not responsible.
He's doing a public service. I mean, if you think about it, many who do this get paid for it, and it's very expensive. They don't know who the donor is. In this case, they know the donor, and in some instances, he is continuing to at least take photos with the children and have some familiarity with them.
Okay, so that's a vote in favor, and one disgusted. Donnie?
Well, I went to Clark Atlanta University, and our school motto was find a way or make one. And by golly, this man and these women, they found a way, and they made one.
Does
and
it
they,
change
they,
anybody's opinion that he's married know. And she didn't know he was doing this?
Oh, okay. Yeah,
yes.
That
well, that's, that piece of it is crazy.
Yeah. There might be a little problem there.
Hector, you haven't weighed in.
No, I just think I'm just amazed. You can walk around the world with 22 kids and not feeling responsible at all for them. You know, in a sense, that strikes me as a little aloof, at the very least. On the other hand, it's good that supposedly he's a highly educated individual.
He's a math professor.
And second, according to the women, they seem to think he's handsome. So supposedly they're getting something out of,
brains,
you know.
Brains and good looks.
I think that's what we would call
but
shade.
But then again, the legal implications are.
That was shade, yeah. Side eye.
Hashtag side eye.
I know.
Well, I think there are legal implications, whether or not this man is realizing it. And the women say, oh, we'll never sue for child support.
I wouldn't believe people. Anyhow, I'm a journalist. I'm way too cynical to just believe people are going to. In any case, let's move on. The decriminalization of marijuana has gained support across the country. Soon, legally obtaining weed might be as simple as picking up your phone.
Are you tired of purchasing marijuana from strangers in parks and back alleyways? Well, now, scoring weed is as easy as picking up your phone. Dial 1-800-MARIJUANA-TO-GO. We'll bring marijuana right to your door.
Last week, Microsoft announced it will work with a small developer to create tracking software for marijuana plants. The tech giant is one of the first major companies that will get in business with the marijuana industry. What do we think of this?
They better go ahead and hand over the code to the FBI and others while they're in the process.
Oh, okay. She's already throwing out the shade, like immediate shade.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
While they're developing it.
She has turned this in a way to complain about the NSA. Okay.
But I understand why they're getting involved, because it's a big business.
Yeah.
And, you know, there weren't very many banks willing to basically service this industry. So if Microsoft gets in, they've got the name that, and they will be able to possibly handle this.
This sounds like Microsoft is betting that marijuana is basically going to become more and more legal in the U.S.
Absolutely.
Right? Absolutely.
Absolutely. I mean, all drugs legal. I mean, I think this is great. I mean, this is technology and progressive values. The only thing I have about this is I hope it doesn't turn into a monopoly, right? Because we already know how that works with Microsoft.
Well, I'm just hoping we don't have the marijuana version of Clippy. That little paper clip that used to.
Oh, God.
Right.
You're dating yourself.
Yeah, I guess so. I've never claimed to not be old. Donnie, what do you think here?
No, I mean, I agree with this. This once again shows, you know, American ingenuity getting in on capitalism. And you see a market, a need for something, and you take advantage of it. I mean, it's legal. So, at least in these particular states.
Doesn't it seem like, though, that major companies usually wait a little longer before they get into an industry that has some taboos associated with it?
But you have to be first if you want to be the brand leader.
Which is what Microsoft has been known for, right? That they were the first. So, I mean, that's a good thing.
Product of innovation and perhaps profitability for Microsoft.
Also, 25 states have now legalized marijuana in some form. So, I don't know if that's getting in at the beginning. And California is going to be voting. Several other states are going to be voting.
It's only a matter of time till it goes legal across the board.
Wouldn't you have kind of, if I was going to say that a major software company was going to get involved with pot, wouldn't you have guessed Apple?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Or
but
Linux.
That's part of it, I think, for Microsoft, you know, trying to sort of break out of this old and create some sort of new energy with the brand.
All right. Well, that's definitely a question for all of our listeners out there. You can let us know what you think about Microsoft helping the legal marijuana business. Tell us what you think. It is Friday. We are, of course, hanging out in the break room. Donnie Liebhardt is with us, filmmaker and longtime employee of the Videodrome. Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent. Tamika DePriest, marketing and communication strategist. And Hector Fernandez of Georgia State University. We want to say thank you to Savannah Coffee Roasters. As always, they donate the coffee that I am drinking and that the rest of our guests are drinking. You can find them online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay, so if you've ever shelled out a bunch of money to see your favorite artist or performer, chances are you probably took a picture, right? A quick video that you were going to share on social media. But more and more artists are trying to restrict cell phone use at their shows. Tech company Yonder has created a new lock pouch that makes sure your phone stays in your pocket.
Their phone slides into one of the cases. There are three sizes. They fit every phone on the market. When the case closes, it's locked. The person keeps possession of their phone, but as they exit the venue, it can be unlocked.
Artists like Alicia Keys, Dave Chappelle, and Louis C.K. have embraced this new device, and I wonder what you think. First of all, what's the most expensive concert ticket you've ever purchased?
I just did it.
He's still feeling the pain.
Yeah, I bought Kanye West tickets. And I know how people feel about Kanye West, but I'm a fan. And I spent $460
That's too much.
Kanye West tickets, yeah.
No wonder he has to.
I'm going to reserve comment on that, Donnie, because I like you.
Yeah.
Wow.
I paid $25 for The Cure tonight.
Yeah.
My ticket price was probably half of the Kanye.
What'd you pay that for?
Kanye West. It's been a while, so I can't even remember. Now, that's the sad
Don't say
part.
Selena Gomez.
No. Not Selena Gomez. I think maybe it was Janet Jackson last time she came.
Okay.
I'm with you. It was R.E.M. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I paid almost $200 for my Prince ticket.
I would do that.
Right. But, okay, so here's the thing. Would you put your cell phone into a pouch so that you couldn't use it during the concert? Or if they told you this in advance, would it keep you from buying the ticket?
Look, even if I'm spending $10 to get in the show, I hate when people have their cell phones out during the show. All in the air. I can't even see the performer. I'm looking at their phone to watch the show.
Well, basically. And it's constantly because if the person, it's all the people in front of you. It's all the people on the sides. It's. I went to a concert where there were a lot of young, really young people, middle school kids, and they taped the entire concert. So it is distracting. So I don't think it's such a bad idea.
And that's an issue for artists. I was actually at the Dave Chappelle show the last time he was here in Atlanta, and there was a don't use your cell phone policy or you'll get put out. And they actually did put a woman out because they had, the equipment
that could
tell.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yes. And
great.
So it's a problem. As long as I can have my phone with me, it's fine. I like
so
the pouch
idea. So you'd
be
okay putting it in the lock pouch?
I'm fine with that.
Donnie, lock pouch?
I'm okay with that, yeah.
Hector?
I think it's necessary.
Kathy?
I'm good.
We have unanimous agreement.
Right. On something.
I know, on one thing.
One more thing that annoys me, I don't know if it bothers anyone else, is that
okay,
if I'm going to a concert, thank you, if I'm going to a concert with a friend and we're watching the show and they're texting everybody, it's like, why aren't you watching the show? This is why we're here.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I have to admit, I do like to take photos, and I was happy to see a little bit of footage about Prince when he was here at the Fox. Is that you with the footage?
That may have been me.
Yeah. I think
somebody actually recorded the whole concert, which turned out to be great, but that's not true of all concerts. Anyway,
there is an issue though. They have to have unlocking devices that stations that you have to go to, and so my issue would be that they would have enough unlocking stations. So if you want to leave and go out and call your friend or have
an emergency,
that you have.
All right. Well, speaking of cell phones, let's stay with that. The lock pouch was made to prevent people from using phone in concerts. This next accessory actually helps them use their phone more. It's called iScout. It's a device for your car that encourages you to multitask while you're in your car. There's a transparent display that'll be used for navigation, messaging, social media. You're driving your car. There's a see-through plastic in front. Tamika's already shaking her head. I haven't even asked the question, Tamika. Currently, iScout has raised nearly $70,000 on Kickstarter, and which of you would, except Tamika, because she's giving me the stink eye, man, which of you would buy this device?
Me.
Hector, okay.
Yes.
Why?
Yeah. because it's necessary, because people are not going to stop texting. I don't text, but I think it's ideal because it's realistic. People will keep on communicating. They'll be driving. So we have to make it safe.
Okay.
And this makes it safe.
Lock pouch. I'm going to start a Kickstarter campaign for that. I just, it's so unsafe. We've seen enough of the images. I don't like it at all. I think OnStar has better technology if you are going to do it, because you can, through your voice, say to them, text so-and-so, and they facilitate that for you. But I don't even think that's safe either. So.
See, I use an app called Agent that blocks incoming calls and texts, and it sends them automatically a message that says, I'm driving, I'll get back to you.
I like it.
And I've gotten that message. So
yes.
But the thing is, I don't think they're saying this is safe. How is this not distracting, having an image?
It's on your windshield. It's right in front of you. You don't even have to move your head.
You don't have to move your head, but you're looking at that instead of the road.
Nah, you're looking at it, and you get to see what's beyond.
Okay, now.
It's a matter of depth of field.
Your brain can only think about one thing at one time.
For some people.
Multitasking is not possible.
I'm not saying that I text on the road, but I am saying that people will keep on texting on the road no matter what. So the sooner we make it safe, the better.
Maybe that means driverless cars.
Yeah. Or the S for less use.
Yes.
Or driverless cars.
Donnie, you going to weigh in here?
Well, I mean, I've seen enough sci-fi movies to see the heads-up display and all that. But I think it's doable. We just have to have the will to want to make it happen.
That was flying cars, too, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Donnie's been watching too much Star Trek.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, the hit Broadway show Hamilton still riding an unprecedented wave of success and Tony Awards and everything else. Tickets are incredibly scarce. In fact, Lin-Manuel Miranda's dad says he has trouble getting tickets. The tickets are selling for thousands of dollars on scalping websites. And like I said, family members having a tough time.
Lin-Manuel Miranda's dad says he wants to see the show a few more times, but, quote, it's very difficult to get tickets. That's right. Even the founding father's father can't get in.
So when one Reddit user scored a pair of Hamilton tickets, she could not wait to see the show. And then it turns out her boyfriend goes without telling her and promises those tickets to his little sister. When she refused to hand over the tickets to give to his sister, his whole family turned against her. As a result, she broke up with that boyfriend. What do we make of this?
Dump the fool.
The fool. Yes? Why?
Yes.
It's her tickets.
Yeah.
Why would he ever have thought that he had the rights to do anything with the tickets? It's her tickets.
Because what's mi casa es su casa?
Not really, when it comes to Hamilton.
Yeah. Men come and go, but Hamilton is once in a lifetime.
Especially with Lin-Manuel there.
Yes, the original cast. And that's why if I'll spend $460 for Kanye West tickets, I definitely would spend more for Hamilton tickets. They're not available. I've gone on Ticketmaster and they're just not available.
They are not. By the way, I'm going to be teasing you about almost $500 on Kanye tickets.
Come on.
Basically,
that's
for the rest of
your life.
That's
why Kanye has the ego he has.
Yeah.
He has people like Donnie pitching $500 for tickets.
Yeah, okay. So, Tamika, you haven't weighed in yet. Would you break up with the boyfriend?
I'm breaking up with him and his very privileged family who thinks I should turn over these tickets, so I'm running with tickets in hand.
What about her strategy of going on Reddit to ask them if she should dump him?
Oh,
that's sad.
This is silly. I mean, I don't know why. That sounds a little made up to me. I'm wondering if this story is totally made up, because why would you go on Reddit and ask whoever.
Are you a user of Reddit? Because that's not weird at all.
No.
Not really.
No.
That happens regularly.
Yeah.
It is Friday. We're in the break room. My guests are Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent, Hector Fernandez of Georgia State University, Donnie Liebhardt is a filmmaker, longtime employee of the Videodrome, and Tamika DePriest is a marketing and communication strategist. All right. Last week, LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers staged an epic comeback in the NBA Finals. They defeated Steph Curry's Golden State Warriors. With that win, the city of Cleveland broke a 60-year dry spell of no sports championships. And after the game, LeBron made his motivations clear.
I gave everything that I had. I brought my heart, my blood, my sweat, my tears to this game. And Cleveland, this is for you.
All right, so Atlanta wasn't quite as bad as Cleveland, but Atlanta is in the middle of a 20-year championship drought. Which of our teams is most likely to break this curse?
Crickets.
Silence. Come on.
I don't know.
I hope
that's
the Falcons.
That's hard.
I hope the Falcons.
What are the chances the Falcons are?
They have been very disway. They've been very disappointing, but they've got some new talent coming in. I don't know.
No. Don't they say that every year?
No. Well, all the teams say that every year.
As bad as it sounds, I think it'll be the Braves.
I can't believe you're
Why does that
it.
Sound bad?
Because they're doing so poorly. But they have to pour money into the team. And, I mean, the Braves can do it. I think they'll do it before any of the other franchises will.
I'm going with the Atlanta Hawks. I think that they have made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, a few times now, and so I think they're going to break through. But we need like a superstar, like a Kevin Durant. I mean, so we need some more backroom deals.
We need Atlanta's
deals.
Version of LeBron.
Yes, we need some backroom deals to make it happen.
Yeah,
Tamika is encouraging backroom deals. Okay, Donnie.
I have to go with Tamika. I think the Hawks will. I mean, I'm hoping the Hawks. I'm a bigger basketball fan. Than any other sport, and they're making some moves. I mean, they just traded Jeff Teague, so hopefully this is the beginning.
We have a soccer team come into Atlanta. Maybe they'll break out of the gate and
that could
win
be the case.
FIFA.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's sold out. The tickets are sold out for the soccer team. So,
who knows? Maybe it'll be that team will come forth. Okay, when real estate agents say that a house has personality, that's usually a big part of their sales pitch. One Atlanta home currently on the market comes fully equipped with a backstory and a name. Mr. Chocolate is the name of this house. The listing says it was designed by a future celebrity architect. And the current owner warns you can sleep on it if you want to, but the smarter shopper will be sleeping in it if you do. So, Mr. Chocolate is selling for less than $175,000. It's not too bad considering how sky high Atlanta real estate is right now. But I wonder, when you guys are looking at listings, even to rent or buy, does personality sway you?
I don't think it would make me more likely to buy, but I think it's going to make people more likely to look. And so eventually they'll find the right. They've got.
I see. Something. It's just a marketing. Well, let's go to our marketing and communication strategist.
Yeah. So it's a draw. You know, it draws me in, maybe more so than another listing, but the house itself still has to sell me.
Right.
It has to wow me.
Okay. Donnie?
Yeah. The name sounds delicious, so.
Mr. Chocolate. I mean, as far as nicknames go.
Yeah, right. I would have to check it out at least, so I agree. Yeah.
It's at least
marketing.
Gets you there.
It's great marketing, yeah.
I think it works. The only, in particular for my case, I think they're catering to a female audience.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
It's working for Donnie.
Well, he's metrosexual. I mean, it doesn't work for me.
It is a lovely chocolate brown if you look at the pictures.
It's a nice house. It's a nice house.
It is a nice house.
And the price is right, actually, so it's a good buy.
All right, so finally, one last question for you. Atlanta-based restaurant chain Moe's has finally, for the first time, surpassed Chipotle as the number one Mexican fast food brand in the country. Now, of course, Chipotle went through that E. coli scare a few months ago. And I wonder what you think. First of all, was that sickness thing the only reason you think Moe's did this, or is something going on at Moe's? And who offers the best fast food, Mexican food in the country?
A lot of my coworkers love Willie's. So
Willie's?
Yeah. Willie's is
Moe's. I'll stay with Chipotle. I think there's something wrong with the tortillas.
At Moe's?
At Moe's. I think they're too crisp and they sort of crack. They're too rigid. The ones in Chipotle are just right. And Willie's.
He's really broken this down.
Willie's is like a point in between. Does it show that I eat a lot of tortillas? Yeah.
Our tortilla expert.
Yeah, well, he's in the Department of World Languages and Cultures. He should be the expert on tortillas the table.
True.
What do you think, Kathy's? What's your favorite fast food Mexican?
I'm going to say Moe's.
Really?
Just because they're very friendly there. I think it's a different
atmosphere. The friendliness makes the food taste better?
I just think it's a nicer place to go. It's a more fun place to go.
Okay. And Tamika, is no one going to say Taco Bell?
No. Which is probably, I think, number one in terms of, you know, not Tex-Mex, but Mexican chains, fast food chains.
You mean profits?
If you call that Mexican.
Yeah, it's not really Mexican. Yeah.
It's not really Mexican.
But I'm welcome to Moe's. There's something about more variety, at least I feel like I'm getting at Moe's. I started with Chipotle when it first, you know, a few years ago, and I trailed off. It was sort of the same thing all the time, and I got tired of it.
Yeah, I never understood the Chipotle thing, why people were so crazy about it.
It's addictive.
Because
it's got cilantro.
I think the E. coli thing has kept me away, honestly.
Yeah, I think that, but I also think they've had some stagnation and lacked some innovation. So I think those two things came together to give Moe's this edge. And it's so odd because Moe's has half the number
of the locations.
Yeah. And don't have as much spread in terms of, you know, restaurants. And so it's really interesting.
But the music is better at Chipotle.
Fair enough. All right. Well, we are out of time in the break room today. I want to say thank you to all my guests, Donnie Leiphart, filmmaker and works at Videodrome, Tamika DePriest, marketing and communications strategist, Kathy Lohr, journalist, former NPR correspondent, and Hector Fernandez, professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Go get
thank
some
you.
Mexican food. We have the same question for all of you out there among our listening audience. Recommend the best Mexican fast food for us. Is it Atlanta-based restaurant chain Moe's or Chipotle or something else altogether? You can call us at 404-500-9457, tweet us, or post on Facebook. For the week, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great weekend.
With extra sour cream, it's a cylindrically shaped seasoned beef dream,
a taquito,
a burrito,
some cinnamon twists,
a chicken border bowl.
Are you getting all this?
All right, so tackle.